You're listening to The Podcast with a K. My name is Christian Caller. You probably know that because you've probably listened to the show before. With me this week is not Brian Terranova, and also it's not James McLean. They're off being locked up somewhere by the regional governments for not doing what they're told. I'm making things up completely. They're both well, they're both busy, and they haven't breached any lockdown regulations, to my knowledge. A man who has, however, is Philip Bates. I'm only joking. I think. Now, this is interesting because until a few moments ago, Philip and I have never spoken before. Philip, you may know from the Doctor Who Companion.com. He also used to be my kind of... He was deputy editor at Casterbus.com many, many, many years ago. And he's here. We've never spoken before, despite in the way of the voice. We've also often just used our fingers to type to each other messages and take the mickey out of each other and ask each other to do things. Usually me asking him to do something and him saying, how do I do that? How are you, Phil?
Hi, Christian. Yeah, good, thank you.
Good-o, yeah, good-o. You? Yes, well, I'm generally fine, and because my children have gone back to school, and it's the middle of the week, so I'm a little bit anxious about meeting targets and things like that. But I thought, hey, here's an opportunity to speak to Philip Bates on the Cast Drivers podcast, so how could I refuse that?
Right, yeah, exactly.
There you go, you see. So, Philip, you have established yourself as a giant in Doctor Who online fandom by stealing my community. So how do you feel about that?
Perfectly fine about it, to be honest. Yeah, quite happy about it, if anything.
It didn't really happen like that, obviously. I'm teasing you. But the Doctor Who Companion is looking really good these days. And I'm not talking in terms of the choice of theme, which I helped you with, and all the other stuff. I'm just talking about the articles that you're producing, the team that you've built, and the feedback you get from the readers.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we're in a couple of days, we're celebrating 5 years, actually, which is
wow.
It was quite big, yeah. So I think I've known you 10. So that I thought I worked on Casterbus with you a lot longer than that, but apparently not.
It felt longer.
Well, I didn't want to say it, but yeah.
The days of Casterbus were very slow. That's why.
No, you always seem to get things moving a lot better than I do, to be honest. But don't tell anyone that.
Would you know there's a reason behind that? Do you want to know my secret?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, so what happened is between the ages of 17 and 27, I completely wasted my life. And ever since then, I've been playing catch-up.
Right, okay. Well, crikey.
It's like the Jeremy Kyle show all of a sudden.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I haven't even got any advice for you. I can't refer you to a psychiatrist or anything.
I don't think I need one, but thanks for the offer anyway.
That's good.
So anyway, the Doctor Who Companion. You do get things done. Don't say you don't get things done. You've got a bigger team than we had at Casterbus. So, and you've got all these reviews coming in for all the Big Finish stuff and all the books.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was lucky in that a lot of the people from Casterbus wanted to move on and they were fully behind it, which it was very humbling. You know, it was really lovely that everybody got behind it, and it wasn't the best time for the show when we started out, because it was 2016, so there was one episode on the air that whole year, so that was immediately quite difficult, but you soon find that there's always something to report on.
And on the other hand, the show's gone from strength to strength since then.
No comment. Yeah, well, it's rocky, isn't it? But it always is, always was, I think. Yeah, and there's there are big gaps, obviously, that you need to fill.
Mm-hmm.
But Big Finish has been fantastic for that. Obviously,
yes. Yeah.
There's always book news. There's always something of interest, I find. Well, I hope, at any rate.
There tends to be. I mean, there's a thing that popped up the other day on Down the Tubes, for instance, John Freeman's site, regarding the BBC, the pitch to BBC magazines to produce a sci-fi magazine in the late 90s.
Okay.
Did you? I think I sent you it. And there was yes, I did. And there was a mock-up of the Doctor, as they would have redesigned the Doctor. And the Doctor in the redesigns probably wouldn't have been in the published version, but the Doctor in the redesigns had a very strong resemblance to Alan Rickman. Now, I think this had been leaked previously a few years ago, but not in the amount of detail that was produced in this article.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that's just like that nice sort of thing that turns up, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's always somebody digging away to find out more. And even if you just check on Twitter, somebody has done something interesting, found something interesting out. So, yeah.
Well, you know, talking about Twitter, Philip is here for a particular reason, and we'll get to that in a little while. But before we do that, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 24th of March, 2021. And the next series of Doctor Who, I've lost count of the numbers, is currently shooting in the northwest of England, specifically Liverpool. And a couple of days ago, there was a claim online on the Twitter, as Philip refers to, that Catherine Tate had been spotted in Liverpool, and all sorts of conclusions were drawn.
Yes, they were. Yeah. Well, apparently Arthur Darvill's up there as well.
Really?
So, apparently. So says the Twitter.
Well, is Daphne Ashbrook there as well? Are we just like picking random companions from the history of Doctor Who and they've all gone to Liverpool at the same time?
Jackie Hill's there, you know. I don't know whether... I think Catherine Tate's just friends with John Bishop, isn't she?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I was friends with someone, I'm not sure I would travel to the other end of the country to see them.
In a
lockdown?
Well, that's true. She's apparently filming a sitcom there anyway, so...
That'll be interesting, if she is.
Well, so I think that's more likely than Donna coming back.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
As much as I love Donna, I can't really see that they could do anything more with her story anyway.
Catherine Tate being in a sitcom, though, that's the sort of thing I think I would know about already. You know, that's kind of a big
bit
of casting for a sitcom on any channel, really. And I'm not really seeing anything about it online. So, I mean, it's a nice idea. And maybe it's true. But,
Do you have any... Do you think Donna's coming back?
I don't think Donna's coming back.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm happy either way. I don't know. I mean, we know that Jodie Whittaker's doing her last series of Doctor Who, so maybe it has something to do with that.
Well, that's not been announced, has it? It's all speculation.
Yes. Well, I say we know, or I know, and I don't necessarily absolutely know. And as you say, it's just speculation, but it hasn't been denied. And then on the other hand, you know, this thing comes around very often. But then again, when did she start doctoring? Was it 2017?
Yeah, something like that.
So, yeah, she's been doctoring for a while now.
Yeah, I think it's most likely that she'll bow out soon. And I did see on Twitter, somebody had got a picture of the slate, said they were doing 9 episodes, so that will presumably include a festive special, which it's becoming a tradition for a regeneration around Christmas, isn't it? So... we shall see.
Yes, the time of rebirth, and Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, there's always bumper ratings anyway. Well, not so much the last two.
Well,
I suppose,
yeah. Well, but... yeah, I mean, that's another conversation. I would, to be honest with you, I was kind of saving this up for a chat next time I chat with James. But seeing as how you're here,
yeah.
Ratings, okay. Everyone's saying, oh, well, you know, the show's been on for X amount of years, and that's good ratings. And it's like, it's on iPlayer as well, and there's other shows on and things. And then Line of Duty appears and gets nearly 10 million on the overnights. And you think to yourself, well, most people I know watch that on iPlayer. So they've all tuned in to watch it live. Midsommar Murders is on TV at the exact same time on the other channel. There's other things on TV. All on the same night, 10 million people watching Line of Duty. How many did it really get, and why is Doctor Who not appealing to a mass audience?
Yeah, Line of Duty has quickly become sort of event TV, hasn't it? And Doctor Who really hasn't had that in, well, probably since The Woman Who Fell to Earth, I would say.
I think you're generous, but okay.
Yeah, I am, totally. But that was about 10 million, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, before that, it would be Day of the Doctor, I would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
That's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is an interesting one, because whenever ratings are reported, you generally hear about all television suffering, particularly the soaps, actually. The soaps doing really badly at the moment.
Well, the thing about the soaps is that I don't think people actually want soaps to reflect real life. I think people want soaps for escapism. So when soap characters are wandering around with masks on, and it's not Halloween, then,
yeah,
you know, the not only is it's a bit jarring, and it takes you back into your own world, it also, you know, who's going to want to watch mask-wearing Kim Tate in 2025? On ITV3 or 4, I do not see repeats of soaps from this era as being of any interest to anyone in the future. They're just going to look at the characters with masks on and just think it looks odd, because it does.
Yeah,
everyone looks like Optimus Prime these days. You know.
Yes, yeah, they'll be historical curios, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is nice.
Well, like EastEnders and whatnot, they do manage to film quite well around it, but they're cutting down the show, aren't they? They're sort of half-an-hour shows are now 20, 25 minutes. Presumably something COVID related.
Well,
this show's going to date.
Everything is these days. Oh, this show that we're talking about now, well, you're absolutely right. This is going to date, because we're talking about COVID, and maybe it'll be completed. We're at danger of going onto a tangent there. So I'm going to hit this button. Now, as alluded to earlier on in the show, Philip is here for a reason, and it isn't to listen to the wrong theme tune. No, Philip Bates of the Doctor Who Companion has written a book.
Indeed, yeah, which is out very soon.
How soon?
It comes out on the 2nd of April.
Okay, probably not then. So it's out next week. 100 Objects of Doctor Who. What?
Yeah.
That's a lot of objects of Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's a lot of chapters.
What's it about?
It was quite a tight word count to fit everything in. So imagine you're plonked down on a space station housing the Museum of Doctor Who. And on that journey, you'll find 100 objects that tell an unconventional biography of the show, not necessarily in a linear fashion. And that includes some very niche trivia, interviews with quite a few people, and all the behind-the-scenes info you'd expect, really. Yeah.
That's very brief. When your initial pitch for it there made me imagine instantly the first episode of Trial of a Time Lord, Mysterious Planet, where entire society is built around those three books.
Yes. Yeah. The Time Lord core is one of the objects, actually. And So the book sort of weaves fact and fiction together a little bit.
Okay.
So I'm really putting the reader directly onto the space station to really immerse themselves in the show and the fandom as well, everything that comes off it.
The front cover of the book appears. Mm-hmm. Is this on the Candy Jar website? The front cover of the book, and it looks kind of like a 1960s or early 70s comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's based on, that was based on TV Century
sure.
21 or stuff like that, you know. There's free transfers.
Are they real? Are they real free transfers?
They're not, I'm afraid.
Oh.
I know. I'm sorry to disappoint. the transfers are one of the objects, basically. So then that spawns a talk about Doctor Who magazine and the role that's played, and various related publications like Doctor Who Adventures, Doctor Who Insider, I don't know if you remember that, sort of 2011, 2012. It was an American version.
Oh, right. No, I don't remember that. I probably should, but yeah. I don't. It's been ejected from the cerebral cortex.
Well, it was quite a nice magazine, but it didn't last long, sadly. It lasted about 10 issues, perhaps.
Maybe they should have used better quality paper.
Well, quite, yeah. No, it was a very high standard publication. So I wanted to look back on the things that yeah, most people would have forgotten if they ever knew about it anyway, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm just going to read the description from candyjar.co.uk, and I'll leave a link to this in the show notes, dear listener. 100 Objects of Doctor Who is a celebration of everyone's favourite sci-fi show. Perfect for fans, no matter your mileage, whether you've just started your journey through all of time and space or have lived through the highs, the lows, the wildernesses, the Androzanis, and the twin dilemmas. Inside you'll find a terrifying army of three Daleks, Death's Head's Head, a really quite astonishingly heavy door, dinosaur fossils, a framed piece of wall, and much, much more. This is a book about Doctor Who, but probably not the one you're expecting. I'm really intrigued about Death's Head's Head.
Right, okay. So I'm a big Marvel Comics fan. So I wanted to discuss the links between Doctor Who and Marvel. And it turns out there's quite a lot of them. So Death's Head is a peacekeeping agent who's a Marvel character, but relatively brief period, Marvel published Doctor Who magazine. So you had the Doctor meeting a Marvel character. And there were various characters that would appear in both for a brief time.
The Transformers?
Yes, Transformers, yeah. We've had Daleks in The Punisher.
Really?
You know, sort of, yeah.
Okay.
Sort of. They look like some of the original Dalek designs that were mooted, but never got off the ground, you know. So essentially like robots. But Frank Castle even asks if they can go upstairs. So it's very knowing. So that whole chapter delves into little things that I don't think most fans will know about necessarily.
Okay, that's cool. I seem to recall, I may be wrong, do correct me if I am, that when Death's Head and the Seventh Doctor met for the final time, it was on top of the Baxter Building?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
HQ yeah. of the Fantastic Four, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that was a nice thing to investigate. And then obviously go into all the cast members who have been in Doctor Who and Marvel, and there's loads of them. So that was a great chapter to write.
Was that your favourite chapter to write?
I don't know, really. There was a lot of fun stuff to cover. So, I mean, there was difficult stuff as well. River Song's Diary was quite difficult. But again, fun, because I wanted to cover what she, you know, the events of her life in a way that nobody else that I've seen has.
Okay.
So I went for chronologically from sort of the universe's point of view, i.e. so the first is Planet One, where she scrawls on the oldest cliff face in the universe. What was so hard about that was getting all the dates lined up, particularly the stuff on Deryllium, because it seems like a night is longer than a year, but they spent 20 years on the planet together. And so I was getting the... It was a lot of fun, but it was a lot of headaches getting the dates right.
How long did that take to sort out? Because that does sound like a big headache.
Yeah, it was... I mean... When I was writing it, you just sort of fully immerse yourself in it.
Yeah.
So it took probably a couple of days.
Because I know you've been working on this for months and months.
Yeah. Yeah, the original deadline was something like October. So it was delivered by then, but then various little things just held it up. So I had a look at the final printing proof a couple of days ago, and we've corrected little bits on that, and so it's at the printers right now.
Right as we speak. Now, I know that it's 100 objects of Doctor Who, but there's also a shorter version for people to read. Is this a kind of a sampler to...
Yeah, just to give people a taste of what they're getting. Really.
So can you tell us about 10 objects of Doctor Who?
Yeah, so we wanted, because nobody, you know, from the blurb, you don't really know exactly what you're getting, I would say. So we wanted to give fans a bit of a taste across all 100 objects. So we cherry-picked 10, discussing various things. So we have the first two objects are in there, actually. So that's the beginning of the show. And then asteroid 3325, which is a real asteroid. It's but it's known as the asteroid TARDIS. So that chapter then goes into the things that Doctor Who has inspired.
Okay.
From you know, yeah, big things like that, like constellations, constellation names, to a family in a soap opera, you know, things like that. And then as we go along, there's a discussion on technology in Doctor Who. There's a discussion of how many companions have met the Cybermen, how many companions have died, things like that. So that's free for everybody to download.
And where will they be able to get that from?
You can get it on the product page from Candy Jar, or you can get it on the Doctor Who Companion, wherever really. Quite a few news sites have got it.
Cool. And that's ready to download now, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, so check the show notes for that, dear listener, and you'll be able to click the link and hotfoot it. Well, you won't hotfoot it, obviously, you won't have to move at all, but your computer will direct you immediately to the page on the doctorwhocompanion.com. So, best of luck with the book.
Thank you.
And I'm really excited to see it, and excited for you to have a book.
Thank you.
Before time.
Thank you. Well, I did a book archive in the Pembroke Opens last year, but it was completely different. It was very straight-laced, very, very analytical.
Yes, I forgot about that. I'll be honest, I did forget about that.
Oh no, that's fair enough.
But that's part of a running series, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, it was 45 in the ongoing series. Anyway, so so that was great to do because I love that two-parter. Anyway. But this was just completely different, this 100 objects. And I even interviewed you for it.
Did you? Oh, God. Am I in it?
Yeah. You are.
Oh, word, my word. Why am I? Why?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Forgive me, dear listener, and Philip. I kind of forgot about this, but because it's been, you know, it's been a strange year, and I've got three children, and I've got like lots of things going on with podcasts and websites, and I'm just watching the HGV go by with a with half a park on the back of it, so slightly distracted there. What did we talk about?
So it's for a chapter about how the show coming back in 2005 spawned lots of websites, lots of fans.
Right.
And so we discuss Gast Erebus.
I see. Gosh. That sounds like... I mean, that sounds silly in hindsight, quite frankly. Yes, thank you for asking me. I do apologize for it slipped my mind. I haven't completely forgotten about it because we did it in email, didn't we?
Yeah, it was quite a while ago now.
Yeah. It has been a strange old year, and so sorry about that. Future notes, checking the history of British culture during 2020s for referring to that again. But before we go. We'll have let's just chat about a couple of general random Doctor Who things that I'm going to just pull out of the air right now. What is Philip Bates' favourite of all time Doctor Who companion?
Oh, I'd say Amy. I think Amy.
Okay.
Because that whole era was really great. For me,
it was certainly fun.
Yeah, I think that's sort of my go-to Doctor Who, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, there are loads. I love Donna. I think in every era there was, well, okay, most eras there were some really great companions. I really like Turlough, for instance. Nobody talks about Turlough recently, but he's great.
They perhaps don't talk about him enough.
Yeah, probably. There's always people who get overshadowed by, say, Jamie, who was on it for so long. So people are naturally going to talk about him a lot.
I've met Mark Strickson, actually, briefly, after a Doctor Who convention in a pub. Not too far from here in Stockton-on-Tees. I was with Anthony Dry and Gareth Cavanagh. That was a long time ago. That was way before 2011. Karen Gillan's a great actress. I don't think she gets enough credit for being as good an actress as she is, because obviously she's very tall and very beautiful. But, for instance, telling your child that the actress who plays Amy Pond is the same actress playing Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy and... the last two Avengers film, that's a kind of a mind-blowing moment for a small person.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, she is fantastic. And I've sadly not seen loads of other stuff, but as you say, I've obviously seen her as Nebula, which she's brilliant as. She did We'll Take Manhattan as well. Did you ever see that? That was excellent.
Oh, was that the one... with the yes, I did see that with Anna in name's gone though, when she played the model,
when she was Shrimpton,
Jean Shrimpton, that's right, yes, did see that, yeah, she was good in that, yes, that was a while ago now,
yeah, I think, was that the thing she did in the break between series 6 and 7?
Quite possibly, yeah. I think we're definitely pre-50th anniversary, so we're talking about sort of 2012, 2013, aren't we?
Yeah, there's some fantastic acting in Doctor Who. You know, she does The Girl Who Waited. Every time I watch that,
yes,
I'm sort of amazed by not just her, but Arthur as well. They were a great team, all three of them, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 2012, We'll Take Manhattan, and it was Anna in... Barnard playing David Bowie. Yes. Wow. Yes, that was good. I forgot about that. I don't think it's been. I haven't seen it repeated. I'd watch that again. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I got it on DVD because I enjoyed it. Plus, yeah, I do like to support her in whatever she's doing. I'm sure she appreciates it personally.
Well, she's a tall girl. I think she can support herself, but
I don't know, height, you know, you might topple over. I'm there for her anyway, okay?
Okay. I mean, that doesn't happen often for tall people. I can speak from experience there. So, ladies and gentlemen, a big thank you to Philip Bates of the Doctor Who Companion for joining us this week and discussing his 100 Objects of Doctor Who. Philip, thank you.
Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, absolutely. As we said, it's been 10 years of communication via email and never speaking. We should leave it another 10 years before we attempt this, I think.
Yeah, I think. Establish a tradition. Yeah,
absolutely. And and also enough time to get over it. And so from all of us at Cast Erebus and from Philip and the Doctor Who Companion, I suppose, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
I told you, don't talk off the theme tune. It goes on, doesn't it?